Hey, folks, just want to let you know that after we recorded this episode of Tape to Tape, John Hines was fired by the New Jersey Devils. We did not have that info while we were discussing possible Taylor Hall destinations for a trade, but we were talking about teams getting desperate, and clearly that's what happened. Things went sideways enough in New Jersey for GM Ray Shiro to make that move. We suspect there may be another move coming somewhere down the line involving Mr. Hall. But just bear in mind, when we're having that Devils conversation, we did not know that John Hines would not be the man to lead this team forward. Hey, welcome to Tape to Tape, powered by the new Ram 1500 Sport, built exclusively for Canadians. I'm Ryan Dixon. I'm a writer for Sportsnet.ca. Joining me in the booth today, another writer for Sportsnet.ca. It is Luke Fox. Luke, how you doing?
I'm doing awesome. Thanks for having me, Ryan.
Thanks for jumping in. Rory is away again this week. We'll have to hear what his excuse is when he gets back. I just think he's dogging it, but we'll see what he has to say for himself. But he'll be back in the booth soon enough, and I know we'll be talking about, if it hasn't happened by then, the Taylor Hall trade. So I want to talk about that with you, Luke. We're going to talk about Leafs. You're heading out on the road with the team here shortly. And we're going to bring Sean Shapiro in to talk about maybe the most interesting team. I mean, it's tough for us. We get lost here in Leafland, and the Mike Babcock firing and Sheldon Keefe getting promoted felt like the biggest news in the world. But the Dallas Stars have lived like seven seasons in one already. They got off to just a brutal start, but have really turned things around and look like a power again in the Central. So we are going to ask Mr. Shapiro of The Athletic what's been going on with that team. But let's start with what is increasingly feeling like the biggest storyline on ice anyways in the NHL. The New Jersey Devils get pumped by Buffalo 7-1 on Monday night. We're recording this on Tuesday afternoon. And in a season where there's already been rumblings coming from Taylor Hall about not liking the fans booing the team when they're only down a couple goals, a guy who we all know was in the last year of his contract, we all know was on the front lines of NHL trade chatter, and we know at this point the New Jersey Devils are listening and listening hard. What's your gut feeling up to the minute on where and when we might see number nine maybe wearing a different number with a different team?
Well, originally I thought this might be a trade deadline deal, but things are going so far south so fast for New Jersey. And Hall, even his recent comments, he just seems, you know, fed up.
Yeah.
And just kind of over it. And he wants to win so badly. I mean, he's had one playoff series in his whole career. And I talked to him in the summer, and he feels like it's kind of shrinking away from him, and he's starting to set in. I'm not a young guy anymore. He wants to win. He wants to thrive off that playoff competition. So originally I was thinking this might be a trade deadline deal, but you have to wonder if there might be more suitors for him now. I mean, yeah. Here's the game for
Shiro. Most teams believe they're in the playoffs right now, right?
Exactly. More teams believe it. So the win is almost as important as the where for Shiro. He has to play this right. Is he going to get the max value for Hall now as opposed to later? And what if he's so disinterested and they fall so far out that he's not producing? I mean, he's not already lighting the world on fire now, but what if he starts to slide a bit? Maybe his highest value could be today, depending on what happens. We don't know. So it'll be really interesting. Plus, I think you got a couple GMs that might already feeling the pressure. And the first guy that pops to my mind is Mark Bergevin. So I think that would be an interesting fit. And then the complicated thing for Hall, I think, is in order for Shiro to get max value in return, you have to do like what Ottawa did with Vegas and Mark Stone last year. And it's if you trade a guy to a team that he's willing to re-sign with, you usually get more bang for your buck. But that's going to be tricky because Hall, you know, looks like the kind of guy that, hey, I've come this far. Why don't I peek behind that curtain and see what free agency is all about?
It's really hard to imagine him not doing it now that he is this far down the road.
Yeah.
You're right. Like, I just can't, you know, Mark Stone wasn't making all kinds of noise about admiring the guys before him who went to free agency the way he has with Tavares, Taylor Hall has. Like, I mean, he's 6 months away now. He's going to see this thing through.
I'd be shocked if he didn't.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why is because I talked to Matt Duchene before his UFA year, and he talked a lot about John Tavares and how that opened his eyes and how players are taking more control of their own situations. And he studied that and was kind of admiring how Tavares handled it. And Hall did the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, he talked about Tavares in a very positive light, and that would be kind of interesting to be in that situation. So, I mean, he has that power now.
Yeah.
Just ride it out. Unless it's, you know, with a team in a situation that he absolutely falls in love with, and then maybe you build that in as a condition of the trade that, hey, you get an extra second or extra first if he re-signs. I see him going the distance.
That's a risky move for a team like Montreal to make right now when you've got a guy who's unlikely to commit, and you're already, you've dug yourself a wonderful little hole here with an 8-game losing streak. Like,
when you see it, right? That's when you see a risky move, is when a team is kind of in panic mode.
We got to do something.
Yeah. And you got to think they're feeling that in Montreal. Like, how many more years can Bergevin go and not dress a playoff team?
It's crazy how quickly things can change in this quick NHL game these days. And I've said this on the pod before. You can tell me if you think I'm crazy, but I actually think there's some parallels. I mean, there was obviously parallels between New Jersey and the Islanders, what the Islanders went through with Tavares, only in that, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and tell you I thought the Islanders would be okay on the ice without Tavares. I thought they would crater too, like everyone else. And it's crazy the degree to which they've gone the other way. But I do remember thinking when Tavares left the Islanders on what was obviously a devastating day for the franchise was actually still in better shape than it had been throughout the entire time Tavares was there, because they'd finally secured a new arena deal. They finally had good ownership in place. They had Matt Barzal. Yes, it sucked that they lost John Tavares, but big picture, there were pillars there that I felt long-term would have them going the right way. Now, it turns out they just had to get Barry Trotz to run the team, and boom, they're fantastic. And I look at New Jersey and I think, well, you traded Adam Larson for Taylor Hall 4 years ago. Hall came, drove you to a playoff spot that was probably premature, got excitement in your building, won an MVP, and now he's probably going to leave, and you're going to get something back for him. As much as you would have loved for it to be this scenario where Taylor Hall came and that was the day everything changed and, you know, winning came back to New Jersey, this was always a team that was very much more in a rebuild, retool. And even when he leaves, they're going to get whatever they get back for him. They're going to have Jack Hughes and Nico Hischier down the middle. I mean, Mackenzie Blackwood is kind of sort of finding his way in the net, and they have a good GM at the helm. I'm just saying all is not lost. And signing Taylor Hall to a mega deal, I understand the incentive to do that, but he's a guy who's known to miss a lot of games. He's had some injury problems. He is, relatively, and as a guy who's got the big 4-0 coming up very soon here, he's obviously young at 28, but in pro hockey terms, you'd rather be paying for 20 to 28 than 28 to 34, right? So I don't know that it's a slam dunk that if you're a team like New Jersey, it absolutely makes sense to sign him to a $10 million per year deal, even if he would have you. I mean, clearly, if there was a deal to be made there, they would be happy to make it. But I don't think New Jersey is left with a smoking crater and where do we go from here?
Yeah. And I think the key is knowing when it's your time. And I think Shiro, it seems, is smart enough to realize they're not one Taylor Hall away.
No.
You know, so why not sell and keep reloading and build around Jack Hughes and make that your centerpiece as opposed to Taylor Hall? I mean, it was really interesting in the offseason, the fact that they went out and got Subban and didn't have to pay
much to do that. That's right.
And, you know, they took their shot, see if they could add a couple bodies. Wayne Simmonds, you know, there were some interesting additions.
Made sense.
And it didn't pan out, right? Or it hasn't panned out yet. They're in too far of a hole. So why not just say, hey, you know what? Let's go with the youth. I know it's going to be require more patience, but they should get another high draft pick of their own. They have guys they can sell off. Like the Wayne Simmonds one's kind of interesting because he's picked up his game a little bit. He's been a bit healthier than his last couple years in Philly. And the fact that they got him at a pretty reasonable rate, I think it was $5 million and only 1 year, they could flip him pretty quickly. Like, a lot of playoff teams might take a look at him. So there's pieces they can sell off.
Absolutely. I mean, look at a team like Colorado and where we thought the Avs were before they traded Matt Duchene. Like, do you remember when Colorado used to be this forlorn franchise that we all thought was being run into the ground, and boom, they win that trade, and Nathan MacKinnon goes to another level, and Rantanen all of a sudden shows what he is, and now we're talking about them like this team that's set up for the next 10 years. Maybe it's not exactly the same in New Jersey, but Jack Hughes is probably tracking the Nathan MacKinnon. I mean, they expect him to be a guy who's going to be in the Hart Trophy conversation. Nico Hischier is going to be a dynamite. I mean, to be able to slot that guy in as your number two moving forward, I just still think there's reasons to feel okay in New Jersey. All right. We've had you in here in the aftermath of Sheldon Keefe taking over for Babcock. It was in the immediate aftermath. What have you seen from the team since they became the Sheldon Keefes and or the Toronto Keefes? And what do you think lies ahead here as we learn a little more about the team, maybe playing some stiff competition?
Yeah, there's been a lot of tinkering. Like he wasted zero time putting his stamp on this team. For one, we just saw Nick Shore get waived, and Jason Spezza has been integrated more than he was under Babcock. You know, with Marner coming back from injury, there was going to be players that had to go just for salary cap reasons. And under Babcock, the sense was Nick Shore was staying, and Spezza was probably on the outs and, you know, maybe out of the NHL for good. So there's been small things like that. Philosophically, you know, it's been mentioned many times, but they're playing more of a possession type game, you know, bring it back out if they don't have a great look, moving up the ice as a five-man unit, as opposed to, you know, having a winger stand at center ice, deflect the puck in, and then go and chase it and really rely on forechecking, which, you know, outside of Zach Hyman, isn't exactly the Leafs' strong suit. So if the look isn't there, they bring it back, they pass it around a little bit more and wait till they have a good opportunity. Now, Austin Matthews was saying that they need to find a happy medium here because they can't always possess it. Sometimes you do have to chip it in, or you do have to shoot and not make that extra pass. So the team's kind of still struggling with finding out how they want to play using what they did right before and bringing in and kind of melding that with what Keith wants to see. And so it's still a work in progress, even though they jumped out to like a 4-1 record under him. Some of that was against softer competition, and a lot of that was Freddie Anderson covering up mistakes, which was kind of, you know, it's been that way for the last 3 years. I think the biggest thing is, and guys have said this, is it's mental.
Yeah.
I think it was just a refresh. So the trick is, how much of this is a honeymoon period and how much of it is, okay, they actually have confidence, they're actually playing better. And I think on this road trip, we're going to see it because they're playing St. Louis, which is a top tier team. Edmonton's near the top of their division. Vancouver's a bit of a stronger opponent. So it'll be pretty interesting to see what they're like against tougher opponents.
So you are heading out with the Leafs on that week long roadie. What's the atmosphere in the building when they go through Western Canada? I mean, most of us, we see on TV. I've never been to a Leaf game out there, I don't think. But what's the vibe in those buildings when the Leafs come to town?
It's awesome. It's really cool. You know, the locals, whatever city you're in, they all remark on it. There's more people in the building for warm-up, even more than they get here at Scotiabank, because there's so many Leaf fans out there. Or they travel, you know, because it's a bit cheaper because you're paying Canadian dollars, not US dollars. So people will build trips around it.
Yeah.
And it's almost like every goal is celebrated no matter which team scores, because the buildings are nearly half full of Leaf fans, and they're the diehard Leaf fans who are, you know, paying cheaper prices than they would here in Toronto. And they're often, you know, on a road trip or whatever. So they're very vocal. So it's like every goal gets celebrated. It's awesome.
And what's it like as a reporter, just kind of being part of the traveling road show? I mean, can you feel the buzz even at morning skates just because there's, you know, more media there than there would normally be? Like, is there kind of a buzz that follows around all aspects of the team?
Yeah, there definitely is. And there's some really cool matchups now because there's superstars in all these cities.
Yeah.
You know, like on a personal, it's my first time getting to see Elias Pettersson play. Because he was injured when the Canucks rolled through Toronto last season. So I haven't seen him play live. So I'm really excited about that. Calgary has some superstars and no shortage of storylines this season. And of course, you know, you get McDavid versus Matthews and Draisaitl versus Marner. Like that, there's a lot of star power for that Saturday night game in a couple weeks that it's going to be electric.
I sometimes think we don't zoom out enough in Canada and think about, I mean, when we talk about Canada and the NHL, almost always the first thing that comes up is, oh, no Canadian team has won the Cup since 1993. And I recognize that, you know, no team has been particularly close of late, but, you know, you start rhyming off Pettersson in Vancouver, obviously McDavid, Draisaitl in Edmonton, and Calgary. We could record 2 hours on what that team has been through, but even just looking, you know, keeping it on ice, there's quite a team there. I mean, Ottawa, there, of course, are questions at the ownership level, but man, they're amassing quite a prospect pool. Winnipeg, if their defense hadn't been depleted, we'd be talking about for sure as a Cup contender. There really is a lot of intriguing pieces in Canada right now and high enders. I mean, like you said, Pettersson against Matthews, the McDavid matchup, like there's heavyweight franchise players populating these Canadian teams right now.
Yeah. And we haven't even mentioned Quinn Hughes.
Yeah.
You know, like what a superstar that kid is or is going to be. Oh. Like that's the other thing. It's like these teams play pretty fun styles of hockey. You know, they're not winning by defense or by grinding you down. All these teams have some high octane offenses that on any given night could put in six goals. So I think that adds to it, right? The entertainment factor.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, make sure you are checking out Luke for entertaining writing while he is following the Leafs through their Western road swing that will kick off next week on the 12th. They are in Vancouver and this Saturday coming up, they start it in St. Louis. All right, on the other side of the break, we're going to talk about some high-paid goalies who are having a bit of a rough go in the crease right now. Lots of dollars being paid to masked men who aren't quite stopping the puck the way some teams had hoped for. After that, Sean Shapiro of The Athletic joins the show. So make sure you stick around right here on Tape to Tape. Welcome back to Tape to Tape. My guess is if you're listening to a hockey podcast, you're probably into fantasy hockey. And if that is the case, you better be checking out the Sportsnet Fantasy Pool presented by Ram. Just go to sportsnet.ca/Ram. There are cash prizes. You can win a 2020 Ram 1500 Sport. How sweet would that be? Once again, just go to sportsnet.ca/Ram to sign up. Luke, how is your fantasy team performing this year?
Well, I have Sidney Crosby on my fantasy team. So I just went from top three to bottom two.
You're in rebuild mode.
I'm in rebuild mode because you look on the waiver wire and there's
no
Crosby
there
to pick up. Yeah.
No.
And I'm in a league with no IR. So I was forced with the decision to either drop him and risk someone picking him up or just hold him.
Right it
and
out.
You're not getting any points from that position.
It's a keeper pool of some kind or is it just year by year?
This one's year by year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah,
that is tough. I'll tell you who is contemplating dropping some goalies right now. Owners of Carey Price. Sergei Bobrovsky, he of the big $10 million contract in the offseason. Those two probably the highest profile and highest paid guys among a group of goalies you wrote about in your Quick Shifts weekly column that really aren't given much return on their buck right now.
No, it's kind of ridiculous. Yeah, Price and Bobrovsky are 1-2 in terms of the salary they're raking in this season. And both of them have a sub 900 save percentage. And I was going through the top paid goalies, and there's 12 goalies that make at least $6 million, and half of them are below 900.
That's crazy.
It's just like a cautionary tale, I think, for GMs to pay, overpay for goalies. And then I looked at the goalies with the best save percentage, and the vast majority of them were getting paid, you know, $4 million or less. And it's just kind of reinforces what a fickle position it is. But at the same time, you have to pay for goaltending because you can't have bad goaltending.
There's
examples of that all over the place.
You still got to have it.
But there's such risk in overpaying. You know, Pekka Rene's having an off year. Martin Jones hasn't bounced back really the
even as the Sharks have. It's not like he's been lighting the world on fire.
It's not him. So there's enough out there that are kind of should send a warning to GMs to be careful before you commit too deep to goalies. And it's going to come up in the summer because you got Braden Holtby and a few other guys that are going to be looking for using Bobrovsky as a comparable.
And it's so tempting as a GM because, yes, as much as you can know, oh, I don't want to put too much of my cap into this, when it feels like there's an opportunity to go out and just lock down the most important position, what is still the position where if you're not getting play there, it's killing you. It's just so tempting, right? Mm-hmm. But, I mean, yeah, you look at someone like Price, who I think is now in year two of that $10 million extension, and who knows how it plays out over the course of the whole contract. I mean, I can tell you if I was Marc Bergevin, I would have absolutely offered him those dollars given how important he's been to that team. But even someone like Price goes through months like he did this November and last year in November where he's fighting it. Now, I will say in his case, his teammates aren't doing a lot to help him, and sometimes that's the case as well. But for $10 million, you're supposed to paper over those mistakes, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's interesting though. It's like a conundrum because what if he said, you know what, Carey, we're not paying you that much.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Then he's going to get destroyed.
That's right.
He's a folk hero in that town, right?
I could go on about this forever, but that's always my point when it comes to really a lot of free agents who are, I mean, like we talked about with Taylor Hall, in and around that 28, 29, 30, they've already done so much. And people cry when you give them a long-term extension and say, well, 5 years from now, they're not going to be worth it. Well, maybe that's the case, but are you prepared to just go, either you sign for the most team-friendly number out there, or we're just going to lose you? Bye-bye, you're gone for nothing. Like, Carey Price walking out the door for nothing? Or even saying a year out that you're going to trade this guy who's been the team MVP for 5-6 years, that's just a really, 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 really tough call.
And what are the chances Bergevin's the GM by the time that contract expires? Like, he's like, I want to win now.
Yeah.
This is the best goalie that I can get, so this is why I'm doing it, and then it'll be someone else's problem.
Yeah.
But I don't think he envisioned year two of the deal.
No.
Things starting to go south.
No, we'll see. I mean, if they can tighten up a little for Price, my suspicion is he'll be fine, but yeah, it doesn't look great right now. All right. It didn't look great for the Dallas Stars coming out of the gate. That is for sure. They really stumbled, but man, they turned things around quick. We're going to bring on Sean Shapiro to talk about what has gone on in Dallas. Stick around on Tape to Tape.
Three Stars in the rush. Perry through the middle. And it comes back into the slot. Fedun trailing the play. Rob by Markstrom, but he scores on his own rebound. Roman Polak. Flip for Dickinson. Cuts along the wall. Feeds it to Perry. Now Sekera. He shot. Stop. Rebound. Score! Welcome back, Matthias Janmark. Sagan. Up high for Klingberg. Shot. Score! Radulov was in front. When it's going right, it's going right. And Radek Foxa helps extend this lead.
Time now for our overtime segment brought to you by Subway. No joke, Subway now delivers. Joining us for overtime this week, covers the Dallas Stars for The Athletic. It is Sean Shapiro. Sean, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, guys. How about you?
We're all right. We want to know how this team, who I believe, Luke, was this your cup pick or Western Conference pick?
It was my cup pick.
That came out of the gate 1-7-1, two-thirds of the way through October. We were ready to throw dirt on this team. And suffice it to say, it's been quite a turnaround in the past month. I'm sure it could be a very long answer and lots of things are at play, but if you were to boil it down, what has helped the Stars turn things around so quickly and to such a large degree?
To boil it down to the simplest thing was they started playing offense. I mean, the first 9 games or so, when they were 1-7-1, they struggled offensively. They didn't get much done. And then during that 12-game point streak, they started scoring goals again. They started getting depth scoring. They started getting more of the play they expect from some of the bigger guys, some of the big guns. And I mean, that's, if you want to boil it down as simple as you can, that's really what it is. This team was They were good defensively. They bought into that identity. That's what helped them last year. And there needs to be more of a realization in the first nine games of, hey, we also have to score goals to win hockey games. And I know that's oversimplifying it, but once that came into play, that's what turned the season around. That things started clicking. They started becoming a threat offensively. They started scoring more goals, and it kind of led to production throughout the lineup. And that's what happened. And it even goes up to the coaching staff, too. I remember Jim Montgomery, I think it was after the 10th or 11th game of the season, said he himself was getting too worried about their identity and needed to let the team kind of go out and play a little bit more. So with that change and with kind of more of that tack philosophy, they were able to use the weapons they have. And that's really the simple way to kind of boil it down.
So I mentioned this was Luke's cup pick before the season, and I don't think he was completely alone. What were the internal expectations, though, for this club? I mean, they obviously took the team that ultimately won the cup about as far as you can to overtime of Game 7. Is it fair to say that this is a team that is absolutely focused on nothing less than a championship right now?
Yeah, and that's something where this team, they looked at last season as they were either a Jamie Benn wraparound or an Andrew Cogliano rush shot or whatever one of the two chances you want to pick in overtime. They were that away from potentially doing what St. Louis did in winning the Stanley Cup. And they believed that's where they were, and that's why they went and made the type of moves they did in the summer, where going in for a Joe Pavelski at his age, going after, now Corey Perry is a kind of a low-risk, potentially higher reward signing. We'll see how it ends. But those are the type of moves that this is what a contender does. This is what someone who's trying to go and win this year does. And that was the expectation, and that's still the expectation that Dallas has right now. And obviously the play in the month of November kind of saved that aspiration internally when there was some chaotic thoughts obviously going on before that.
Sean, you mentioned Jamie Benn, and I'm really curious about the captain. I find him to be an interesting case the last couple years. Where are you at with Jamie Benn and his performance, and why do you think his play seems to pick up when he gets called out publicly?
It's interesting, because I think Jamie Benn, to me, is a player who, he's not the Jamie Benn that got the contract that he got. Like, I think he was signed to this big contract, and I think that may have set a bit of an unrealistic expectation for him to kind of keep living up to that contract numbers-wise. But I think Jamie Benn is actually a pretty good, he's a rather solid top six player. He's a guy who, if he wasn't making $9.5 million and he was making $6 or $7 million, I don't think people would be upset with his play. I think the issue for Jamie is, I think he's an older 30 than, like, he's 30 years old, but I think with how he played and his style, I think he aged quicker than someone who would have played a less physical style, and the Stars kind of misjudged the aging curve, and full credit to Jamie for signing the contract. And I think Jamie Benn is at a point in his career where he can't be that dominant player 82 nights a year. I just don't think it's possible. I think it's something that I don't think anyone would ever even think about doing in the NHL, because it would be frowned upon, and it's a very NBA thing. But if you were to ever look at an example of where someone should use load management, it would be Jamie Benn, because I think he goes through games where he'll go through three or four games of being that really good player and then needs two or three just where he kind of almost has to refresh and gets going again. And I just think it's kind of the aging curve caught up with him, and there's still that player there, but he can't be that player 82 nights a year, and it needs to be managed. I think it's a spot that the Stars obviously don't like that mentality, and they don't like that because you don't pay $9.5 million for someone you have to manage, but that's who he is in my mind now.
That's interesting, especially the load management angle on anyone under 35. Do you think it's a guarantee that he finishes out that contract in Dallas?
I think so. It's one of those where you start to, there's a couple, like, I have that slight hesitancy in my voice just because there's always you play the what-if game with the expansion draft. But even in that case, Jamie holds full control and has the full no-move clause. But Jamie, I'm pretty sure he finishes career in Dallas because he's got the full control here. He has the no-movement clause. He bought a house in Dallas 4 years ago. His brother Jordy Benn still lives here in the summer. And, like, they made Dallas home, and Jamie has pretty much said to me before that he plans to play the rest of his career here. So unless there was a massive change of heart or he felt completely forced out, which even in the end, he'd have to sign off on himself because of that full no move for the rest of the contract, I just don't see him leaving Dallas. And with what his contract is, I don't see there being realistic someone who'd be willing to take that contract either. So I think he's here. I think he is what he is. And I think it's kind of one of those things where for the Stars to have long-term success with him, they need to realize what he is. He needs to realize what he is. And that's something they'll have to balance.
Tell you where load management has been working beautifully in the net. It's kind of happened organically there. And, you know, if there is a poster team for the new NHL in terms of how you deploy your goalies, I have to believe Dallas is it. Now, Ben Bishop was a Vezina caliber goalie when the Stars acquired him. They knew what they were getting, or they certainly hoped they knew what they were getting. But Anton Khudobin has just been a revelation here now in his second year with Dallas. His numbers are even better than they were last year when he played half the games. I mean, he had shown well at different times previously, but what have you seen from Khudobin, and why is this a tandem working so well for the Stars?
Yeah, I mean, you look at Anton Khudobin, and it's hard to imagine. What was it, 4 years ago? He was playing in the AHL with San Diego, I think. And I remember when Dallas initially signed him, I remember thinking it wasn't a bad signing, but I didn't see it as a massive upgrade over Carey Letton, and obviously it has been. What Khudobin brings, and I think kind of the thing that and why it works so well in tandem with Bishop is Khudobin seems to be, and talking to him, you kind of hear this too, he's a goalie who really thrives when he has that kind of repetition and he gets into a routine that works well for him. And obviously the old school NHL backup schedule, you didn't have that typical routine. You could play 12, 18 games, but you could go a couple weeks between games and stuff like that. I think he's found a routine and a rhythm where he prepares and plans like a starter. And I know it's cliche to say everyone prepares like a starter, but I think he really found what it's like to feel like he's the starter, to feel like he's the 1B, and to know that he's going to play. He's never going to go 3-4 games without playing. I think that's been huge for Khudobin. And I think at the same time, that's been great for Bishop, for his health. And I think it's also pushed Bishop too. I mean, Khudobin is someone who, you look at what the Stars were before, for many years they had backup goalie issues, to now with the strength. It's, a lot of that just goes to Anton Khudobin, and I think you kind of see it in practice every day too, where he's a little bit crazy, he's a little bit energetic, but I think he brings things that this team needs that maybe we don't even see in the games he plays as well.
A little crazy is never a bad thing, and Jim Nill's kind of been crazy in his pursuit of veteran leadership. I raised my eyebrows when he went and got Andrew Cogliano, and then in the summer getting Corey Perry, and Joe Pavelski was a massive one, but lifelong Shark, and he's under half a point a game in Dallas. How has the transition been for Pavelski in your eyes?
It's interesting because I think the area where they signed Pavelski, it obviously the goal scoring, and he had the 38 goals last year, and he's not producing at that clip right now. I don't think the offensive finishing is not obviously what they paid for, but I think so far, I think there's other elements of Pavelski's game that we've seen that have been a huge part for the Stars team so far. I think the leadership wise, I think he did a really good job, and kind of Perry and Cogliano, who you mentioned as well, and even like a Blake Como who joined this team last year, like they did a really good job of kind of building that secondary leadership group where I think that kind of eased the burden on Ben and Sagan and Klingberg. I think that made things a little bit easier in the locker room. And then I also think Pavelski, there's other little parts of Pavelski's game that I think have helped unlock some other younger players. He's played well with Dennis Gurianov. He's played really well with Ralph A. Hintz. And those are players where Pavelski's not going to keep up with those guys as far as skating-wise, but he's such a good passer, and he reads the game well and kind of puts pucks where those guys need to be and kind of lets them run with it. Now, obviously, he needs to score more to be worth that contract that he signed and get some more points. But I think the little things are there, and we're still at the phase of the contract and early on where we can see what's going to happen and how things are going to keep going. Obviously, if he's still having the point production he has and we're talking 35, 40 games from now, it's more of a concern. But I'm not overly concerned right now because I'm still looking at the other positives, I guess.
Sean, do you get the sense in some ways that the Stars are a team in transition? And what I mean by that is, I mean, here we are talking about it being very much in win now mode. And we've really, at least from the outside, we identify this team as, you know, they're defined by Tyler Seguin, Ben, Alexander Radulov, Abisha, but they have this group of under 25s and quite young players in some cases. Obviously, it's a miracle we've made it this far without talking about Miro Heiskanen and the way he is playing. Roope Hintz, John Klingberg, even Erratic Faxa. Do you think we're kind of quickly moving toward the day where, for lack of a better way of putting it, this is kind of their team?
And I think we're already getting close to it. I think maybe one of the most telling things about it is, right, like the Stars have the Winter Classic coming up this year, and with the jerseys that were made available, the Winter Classic jerseys, it was Bishop, Ben, Seguin, Klingberg, Hintz, and Heiskanen, and the Hintz and Heiskanen jerseys sold out before anyone else.
Wow,
I think that's kind of a showing Now I know obviously a lot more people probably already have a Ben and Seguin jersey, but it's still telling to say, look, okay, these two kids, they're the future, and there's a fan base that recognizes it too. And so I think we are seeing more and more of them becoming the face of it. And I think people are continuing to appreciate more and more what Heiskanen does every night. And the injury to John Klingberg that cost him about 7-8 games earlier just kind of put him even more of the spotlight. So, like, those guys have kind of taken this step, and they're going to continue to take it, it looks like. It's still going to be, I think Ben and Seguin will still be the guys on the billboards for now and stuff like that. But it would not surprise me if we're talking about this as when the Stars come to town, it's Miro Heiskanen and the Dallas Stars, if that's not the narrative and even by next season or anything like that, because that's how good, especially Miro is.
Yeah, the bar is set very high for this team, and certainly driving that is this crop of young players. I mean, I keep thinking back to when Erik Karlsson was on the block. I mean, basically, I think it's pretty well known that the Sens asked for Heiskanen and the Stars were like, I don't think so. And that was before he'd played a game in the NHL. So they obviously had high expectations for this guy, and he's certainly living up to them.
Yeah, it's amazing to think back on that, where you went from, I remember there was quite the, I would be writing about how the Sens wanted Heiskanen, and people say, well, this is freaking Erik Karlsson. Who cares how good this kid is supposedly going to be? He's never going to be Erik Karlsson. But, and then he's been, I mean, and now anyone who was on that other side of, well, you got to trade Heiskanen for Karlsson, obviously now, they're clearly happy the Stars did not make that decision.
Yeah, they're all running out buying their Winter Classic Heiskanen jerseys.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what's happening. Nice. And he's also maybe not the flashiest guy, but you also have the third Finn that's going to be a big part of this team for a long time too, and Esa Lindell as well. And so obviously the Stars are just continuing to kind of live with that European contingent. It's funny, the other day, and they had practiced the other day where they did a Team Europe versus Team North America kind of three-on-three tournament, and Team Europe smoked Team North America. So.
Those skilled Europeans that get you every time. Well, it's been a wild ride already this season for the Stars. We'll see where it goes from here. Thanks so much for joining us, Sean.
Yeah, take care, Sean.
Thanks for having me, guys.
That is Sean Shapiro of The Athletic. He covers the Dallas Stars. What made you pick them for the Cup, Luke? What did you like?
I like their offseason, and I feel like their decor is on the rise. And like we talked about, I think they have a true goalie tandem, much like Boston has going now. And
Islanders,
yeah. And I think that's what you need to succeed. And I also felt like they were so close. And I feel like teams that come so close to getting to that next level, it gives them a taste. And then they come back even hungrier. They're like, we can do this.
Yes.
So I think it instills
fake that.
A little bit of more belief. So that's why I picked them. And then I looked really stupid for about 3 weeks, and I'm starting to look smart again.
You know how close they might have been? I would say last year they were a Joe Pavelski tipped puck away. And he might not be lighting the world on fire so far, but he's a guy you sign for May and June, especially when you have the other pieces they have. He's a guy who, when things get tight, his game, that ability to just get the stick or the shaft of the stick on a shot from the point, I still think he's going to have something to say about what happens with his team, especially in crunch time. So, I mean, yes, you'd love the guy to be flying out of the gate, but they didn't sign him for October, November, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the Sharks never missed the playoffs, so he has tons of postseason experience. And he's a guy that the guys rally around.
Yeah.
I mean, who can forget when he was down on the ice and just like how struck the rest of the team was.
Yeah.
They wanted to win for him in the playoffs last year. And, you know, I think over the course of the season, guys will come to respect him even more.
Absolutely. Well, that is our show for today. Thanks so much to Luke for jumping in the co-host seat. Thanks to Sean Shapiro for joining us. He is in Winnipeg for a game that will probably have happened by the time you are listening to this podcast. Thanks so much to our man, Amal Delich, in the booth. He doesn't get enough love. We got to give a little love to Amal, who is running all over this building here, recording podcasts and doing a fine job. If you want to follow Sean on Twitter, you can find him at Sean Shapiro, S-E-A-N-S-H-A-P-I-R-O. Luke is at Luke Fox Jukebox. Myself at Dixon on Sports. Check out sportsnet.ca for all your hockey coverage and all kinds of things going on in the sporting world. Check back next week for more glass rattling hockey action. Tape to tape.